Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, thank you so much for this morning and for this wonderful conference we've been at and for the people we've gotten to know and talked to and networked with. We thank you that you are in the details. I pray that you will bless this class in Jesus' name. Amen. Oops, it doesn't have the verse.
Yeah, so we're going to bring in the harvest this morning. And Deuteronomy 8:10 says, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you." And it's just a wonderful thing to have abundance. This is my youngest daughter in our fruit tree there with Puget Gold. If you ever have an opportunity to plant a Puget Gold apricot tree, apricot tree, they are so good. The flavor is very full and rich. Just a highlight there. There's one more. And then we're going to talk about harvesting, using your produce, canning, freezing, and drying. So when it comes to storing things, you may have a variety of ways in which you can store things, but check out almanac.com, storing harvest without a root cellar. I don't have a root cellar.
So I do have a walk-in cooler, so that kind of does the job.
Those are nice. So first, root cellar alternatives, find a cool, dry place in your house. And dark is often good too. So does any room in your house stay below 60 degrees, but above freezing? That's a good range. Do you have a closet on an outside wall? Can you section off the closet corner, the coolest corner of the attic or a cellar or an attic, or that would be like a basement too? Do you have an unheated mudroom or an entryway? And how about picnic coolers or clean metal garbage cans with insulation in an unheated garage or shed? So those are some options for where you can store things.
Above, it would be above freezing.
You have to somewhere between 60 and... So we have a shed, and it's semi-insulated. And we get really cold temperatures, but we have a small little oil heater in there, just a little plug-in thing. And that's where the dog and the cat sleep, and that's where my tubers are for dahlias, and that's where the squash is. And it stays about 50, 55, and we get really cold winter. So.
At Farmer's Friend, they had a little gadget that you could turn the room into a cooler with just a window air conditioner.
Yes. So that's what we have. I have a walk-in cooler that was a proper cooler, and we were having one problem after another with the system, and those guys that come out to fix it are super expensive. So we finally got a cool bot and put in a little air conditioner, and my daughter did it actually. It works great. It's everything we need for our flower farm and BOT. Cool bot. Yeah, it's just a little gadget this big. If you go to the booth, they have one sitting on the table. It's just this big. So, okay. Group one of your vegetables, like cool and moist environment. These root crops like it 32 to 40 degrees. And it needs to be very moist, 90% humidity. I cannot achieve that. And that's what my dahlia tubers need, but I can't achieve that where we live. It's just dry. And my tubers don't look like a freckled herd that has a booth. But they work. They grow. Nothing happens to them, so I'm okay. So these are the root vegetables that need to be covered in packing material like sand or peat moss and should be kept moist but not wet. You can use a spray bottle on your sand every once in a while just to moisten it a bit. And those would be carrots and turnips, radishes, rutabagas. they can't touch each other. So you can take a cardboard box or a wooden box, put a little layer of sand, lay your carrots down side by side, but not touching, a little layer of sand, another carrot, row of carrots, another layer of sand. That's how my mom did it when I was a kid, only I think she put it in an apple bin because it was this big. At least that's what I remember as a kid. Everything's bigger when you're a kid. Celery keeps best if pulled up by the roots and stored upright with the roots in damp sand. I never keep celery that long, but it's possible.
Group 2, cold and dry. Colder, cold but drier, so 32 to 40 degrees and 60 to 70% humidity. Apples, pears, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, and potatoes can be stored in the same place as root vegetables as long as they are given extra air circulation to keep them drier. So there are just a couple things with this. If you are storing your apples and your potatoes in the same room, try to give them a little distance because the apples will help the potatoes preserve, but the potatoes emit the gases that soften your apples. And I understand also that apples can cause your carrots to go bitter, just the way the gases they emit. So sometimes you have to kind of juggle things around a little bit. And apples actually can have a higher, an apple grower in our vicinity told me they store their apples at 27 degrees, above 90% humidity. Or so those are in boxes and huge coolers that, that's amazing that they go down that, they keep them that crisp. Yeah. Yes.
This is where you would find it. You would look on almanac.com and do a little search for storing harvest without a root cellar.
So then for apples and pears, many gardeners advise wrapping each fruit individually in newspaper to help them keep longer and discourage any rot from spreading. They do need a little air, but even a closed box can help keep the moisture in there. Cabbage and Brussels sprouts can be uprooted and replanted in a bucket or a bag of moist soil. And potatoes need darkness and a spot near 40 degrees. And you don't want them to go too much below that because they start to sugar. The starch turns to sugar. And you can bring your potatoes out of cold storage if they're doing that and let them sit. And I understand that adjusts. I'm in the process of learning that, but you don't want them to sweeten up too much. Isolate apples in their own container. They give off ethylene gas and also absorb strong flavors like cabbage and carrots.
It ruins them. It absolutely ruins them.
Bosc and Anjou pears are good keepers. Condition them to 50 degrees to 70 degrees in a dry, airy place for a week before storing them.
I live in the Anjou capital of the world. They grow Anjou pears in a very small area. There's only one other microclimate like it in the world, and that's in Kazakhstan. And so our neighbor actually went to Kazakhstan and taught that people there how to grow these Anjou pears. You pick them in September, October. They aren't ripe until Christmas, but they're really good pears. And they do. They wrap them in newspaper. Okay. Cool and dry. Cool 40 to 50 degrees under 60% humidity would be your onions and garlic. And you can keep them in an unheated spare room or closet. Let's see. You can braid them. Not all garlic braids, but some of it you can. They can be stored in shallow boxes or baskets, no more than two layers deep. I have in my cooler potatoes on one side, big box of garlic, boxes of onions. I only have one place, so you know that's where it is. Although I have the shed and that's where the squash is. So I just don't put apples in there. Yes. Sweet potatoes are totally different from potatoes. Yes. Okay. Do we need, what do they need?
This is what sweet potatoes are. Okay, we're moving on to slightly warmer and drier. 50 degrees to 60 and dry, 60% humidity. Sweet potatoes, pumpkins, and winter squash actually need slightly warmer conditions to keep their texture. So they can be kept in a dry basement or closet in the home, which is below room temperature. And I have found, one year I tried storing my squash in the garage after I brought it in, and garage temperatures drop below 40, and all of a sudden everything was going, it was molding, and I lost a bunch. So a cool room above 50 or above is good. Squash and sweet potatoes do need to be cured before storage. So we were talking about this a little bit yesterday. You want to turn the water off to them 2 to 3 weeks before that last frost and let them, they will sweeten up, they will mature. Sometimes you notice that if you touch them and your fingernail goes in the skin, they're not mature enough. They won't, you can use them for a couple, hold them for a couple of weeks, but they will not, those particular ones are late and you need the hard ones to store them. So they need to mature to where you touch that skin, it's not going to break or dent. I separate them. The ones that I think are still immature, I keep them aside so I can watch them. And the hard ones, then you can put them where you need to.
So some things can be left in the ground. At home, I have potatoes and carrots still in the ground. Potatoes are still there because I never got to them. They'll be there in the spring. And the carrots, I left them there purposely. Last spring, I dug up 7 5-gallon buckets of carrots. But you don't leave them long. Once the snow is gone or the cold is starting to warm up, you pull them up because they get all these little fuzzy roots and then they're not fun to peel. But I know that when I get home, it'll be a month before the snow leaves, and then we'll dig up all those carrots and we'll all go on a juice binge, you know, carrot juice binge. It's really good. Yeah, and you don't get enough snow to cover them, or yeah, so it's you would have to heavy mulch it, which is maybe not worth it. With us, we have this much snow, it's protecting it. Because the other day, I found a bunch of tulips I forgot to plant in the fall. And so I got a cardboard box out, 3 cardboard boxes out, there was that many. I put dirt in, put my tulips, and then covered them in dirt. So then I was like, okay, where am I going to put them? So I went out under the pine tree where the snow was the least deep. I got my shovel and I dug to the ground, and the ground was not frozen. Mm-hmm. So even though it's 20 degrees this morning, you know, the ground is not frozen. You can extend the season. We're going to talk about that today, and still have fresh greens all winter long, and carrots and stuff you can pull all winter. So one thing to remember is you can't just store these things and walk away and come back 3 months later. You have to check them every once in a while. You need to walk through, check your vegetables, make sure there's not one rotten one will wreck the whole thing. So that's just really important. Some lovely squash that Sherry's grown.
These are banana squash, and they cross, so the bigger ones on the end cross with the sweet meat. The longer ones were banana squash. This is buttercup squash. This squash is really interesting. It sweetens up, but if you pick it when it's about this stage, before it starts to sweeten up, I don't know if you've tried this salt, the black namak salt. It kind of has an egg flavor. You take this squash and mash it. Maybe put a little mayo and that egg salt, and you think you're having an egg salad sandwich. It's actually really good. And those are sweet meat, and those couple of those have crossed with the buttercup. So
sweet meat's my favorite. And we do like the banana at our house. And they get really big. There was an old gentleman in our church, and he used to grow them, and he would bring us some that were this long. Like, okay, it's going to take us a week to eat this. Okay, so we're on to a few recipes.
It's always good to be able to know how, you know, if you get this abundance, you can't use it immediately. I mean, you can make some fresh salsa or something, but it's really nice to be able to preserve it. So here's a tip that I've used. Someone shared this with me, and Angela uses it too. When you have your tomatoes, years ago I used to put it through the squeezo or whatever and sauce it down. And that's one way to do it. But one of the fastest ways to make your tomato sauce, basic tomato sauce, is wash your tomatoes and just stick them whole in your blender and just blend them until there's, you don't see any seeds or anything. And then you can put that, depending on what you're doing, but if you want thick sauce, put that in a big kettle and put it on low, and you'll have to stir it periodically, but let it cook down. And when it's cooked, it might take half a day. And sometimes, you know, canning can get overwhelming because you feel like you have to do it all in one day. And so I've tried to learn that, okay, I can put this in the refrigerator overnight and I can come back to it tomorrow. Do it in steps, and it can help you pace yourself through whatever else you have to do. So if I get to the point where it's not fully cooked down overnight, I will put it in the oven at 150 or 170 and just leave it there overnight. It'll go down a little bit more, not usually as much as on the stove. And then you can start in the morning with your hot sauce and add your seasonings or whatever into it, or can it plain. The other thing I will do, if I want to have like just a tomato sauce, that just plain tomato sauce, I will steam the tomatoes a little bit in a big kettle and then run them through the champion until all of the peels and the seeds are really dry. And that makes a nice, that's almost like a soup consistency. And you can just can that straight with salt. And we'll talk a little bit more about later if you need citric acid.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Some tomatoes, you need to add citric acid. I believe it's a quarter teaspoon per quart.
Or lemon juice.
I just use lemon juice. I put a tablespoon of lemon juice in the top of every quart of anything that's tomato.
And then a kind of a standard, this is pretty much standard for cooking or canning, 1 teaspoon of salt per quart. So if you're doing pints, half a teaspoon, but 1 teaspoon of salt per quart, that works, that's a good ratio for cooking and sauce alike. And then if you find that your sauce is a little more acidic than you personally like, you can add, I believe it's about a tablespoon of sugar, a tablespoon of honey, or something that will kind of cut that acid. And you can do that when you open your can, or you can do it in your whole. I put it through my spaghetti sauce. So,
the reason you're putting citric acid or lemon juice in your tomatoes is if you're hot water bathing or canning, open kettle canning, or if you are pressure canning, you don't have to do that. But the reason they're concerned that tomatoes, because we're breeding them to be less acidic, some of the heirloom ones are still acidic. But if you're canning, you know, for me, I can everything that comes out, yellow, orange, red, you know, they're different colors. The yellows are not acidic tomatoes. They're not acid enough. And botulism is a concern. I've never heard of anyone getting botulism from tomatoes, but that's what the standard says. So my husband is a nurse, and he has taken care of botulism patients. They canned asparagus. It was a lumberjack guy. He canned some asparagus. He had his buddies over, and they almost all ate it, but one guy, and slowly the paralysis started in their feet, and the one guy who didn't eat it called 911. He got the guys to the hospital. My husband took care of them for 3 long months. The paralysis goes all the way up, and then as you're getting better, it slowly moves its way back down. So, you know, they were really sick men. And so it's not really that easy to have botulism in your food, but it does happen. So that's why we take the cautions. We use a little lemon juice or citric acid in the tomatoes because we don't know if the tomatoes are acidic enough. Yes. I do a tablespoon every time, every quart. Just because, yes, of lemon juice. She uses a quarter teaspoon of citric acid. And I've done that. I've done that as well. Yes. No, you can't taste or smell it. That is why you take the precautions. He didn't pressure can it, I think. Or he didn't do it long enough. Or his pressure canner wasn't any good. So I have several pressure canners. People have given them to me. Every time an older person dies or whatever, I get all the jars and all the canning equipment bequeathed to me. Well, I have some pressure canners that are so old, they're not going to pass the inspection. But you take them to your extension office, and they will tell you if they're any good or not. And I had a friend who was looking for one during COVID, and nobody could find canners. And I said, well, four of them right here. Why don't you take them to the extension office and see which one works? Only one was any good. So this past summer, I didn't can with a pressure canner because I couldn't find the right seal. And I didn't have time to take it to the extension office. So I froze my green beans instead of canning them. You just find ways to do it that's safe. So it's just a caution, not a scare. Canning is good. And a lot of people are like, I don't think we could do this, but you can do it right. And no, freezer food cannot get botulism. Fruit does not get botulism. It's the vegetables, and I'm not sure why tomatoes are on the edge, but yeah.
It has to do with the acid and the alkalinity, and so... You know, green beans are more alkaline, tomatoes generally more acid, but fruits, because of the sugar, they don't get that. So
you just need to make sure you're following, that you're doing high enough pressure long enough. So go to Pinterest. I'm canning green beans today. How do I do it? And you'll get 500 recipes, and they're all the same. They're almost all the same. Yes, there's a book in your pressure canner box. You can go to the extension office, and they'll give you a booklet. I have one from when I lived in Georgia 30 years ago, and I use it. I should get an updated one probably, but the problem is I've written everything down in there, and so it's like personalized.
And there is an elevation calculation. So if you're lower or higher, it will tell you, it will say, you know, so many minutes or add a minute for every. Okay.
I put it in here for you.
So it'll be in the handout.
It's 5 minutes for every 1,000 to 3,000 feet above sea level. So you just add time. Anyway, the calculations are all there for you in the handouts.
Okay. I think we covered the potatoes. I did talk about that yesterday. That was back, actually, always. Just harvesting them and all. And by the way, you can your potatoes, and they do need citric acid as well, so if you don't mind that flavor. Otherwise, you can also freeze your potatoes. If you parboil them, you can freeze them, and you can cut them however you want to have them pull out and be used. So you can dehydrate them. Yeah.
Okay. My freezers are too full for potatoes.
Any potatoes? Oh, yes. Main Potato Lady, the Main Potato Lady, she also has there a PDF for growing your potatoes. And again, Bob Gregory has an excellent audio verse on storing food for the long haul. He has a lot of tips about curing and storing. So just kind of wraps us up on that aspect.
As the cold of snow in the time of harvest, so is a faithful messenger to them that send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. Okay, let's talk about peas for a minute. I grow a pound of regular pea seeds every summer, and then you pick them in like three times, two to three times. They come on all at once. You pick them, you pod them, they go in the freezer, and they are so good. It's a treat. Every time I bring out the peas, my mom is like, wow, these are the best peas in the world. These are so good. So you can use them. I don't even blanch them. I just put them in bags in the freezer. And then you can just put them on your salads raw or, you know, thawed, or you can put them in soups and steamed and whatever. Snap peas are fresh eating only, really. You can eat the shell, peas and all. Beets. I do a simplified pickled beet. You cook and skin the beets, careful not to overcook them, and then you put them in jars, whole or sliced. And the recipe's in the handout, but 1/3 cup of lemon juice, 1 tablespoon of sugar, and 1/2 teaspoon of salt. If you have dill, that's great. And you hot water bath them for 30 minutes. It is so easy, and they are so good. My niece came to live with us from Africa. She grew up there, not fond of a lot of foods, but she loves my beets. I think just growing up where you have very little choices, she's just never learned to. She's getting better at it. Carrots, we store sandboxes in the cooler or left in the ground over winter. I do the over winter. Green beans, fresh eating, or we can freeze them. I blanch them first, cut them up, chop them up, blanch them, and put them in bags. I don't like them really long. I just don't like to eat them that way. If you can them, pressure can them, because typically you don't put lemon juice in green beans. I make a dill pickle with lemon juice. Our family doesn't use vinegar generally, occasionally some apple cider vinegar for some special reason, but generally speaking, we use lemon juice in place of vinegar, and so pickles is a hard one because it doesn't have quite the same bite. Canning pickles, the recipe is there for you. You bring it to a boil in the canner, and then you take them out. It's 5 minutes at the most, otherwise you have mushy pickles. And the thing to do is either put cabbage leaves or grape leaves in the bottom of your pickles and over the top. And that'll help to keep them a little firmer. You can't slice them up or they won't be firm at all. So there's a recipe there for ketchup. It was a new one for me. I made my niece, again, she loves ketchup. So we were going through bottles of it. I was like, okay, I'm going to make it this time because you don't know what's in the stuff that comes from the store. So I made a whole lot. The recipe is a little on the sweet side. I cut the sugar and I cut the sugar and I cut the sugar. And I still think I would cut the sugar. Just, you know, you take a recipe off the internet and everybody says, this is a good recipe. And then you taste it. It's like, wow, there's a lot of sugar in there. Ketchup has a lot of sugar in it. I just didn't realize. And so I cut several cups and then I cut and then I cut. And it's still, the kids say it's good, but it's still a little bit too sweet for what we think it should be. I have a salsa recipe here. She has a salsa recipe as well. Spaghetti sauce, the same thing. I make a lot of spaghetti sauce. I can tomatoes just plain, and we can make spaghetti sauce on whenever, you know, we're cooking. But if I just want to make a quick lasagna or something, it's really nice to take a jar off the shelf and pour it in the pan and just go along with your layers. So canning spaghetti sauce, I don't peel the tomatoes. I just blend them in my Vitamix. Works really well.
And about the salsa, salsa, in my opinion, is better with lime juice than lemon. And a few years ago, I found out that, I mean, I used jalapenos to make it whatever warmth we wanted it. I generally do it mild. But then I came across the serrano peppers, and they have much more of that authentic salsa flavor. It just depends on the pepper, how large they are. It does sometimes a batch. It does not take, a home-sized batch. I might use a third of a pepper. If I'm doing several quarts, then maybe it'll just take a couple of peppers minced up. And it seemed like there was another thing I was going to say about salsa. Oh, if you don't mind the peels, you can mince them or you can pulse them in your food chopper. But sometimes I like to take the time to go ahead and peel those Roma tomatoes and cut them up because you get more of a nicer texture. And typically, if you will use Roma or paste tomatoes, your salsa will not be watery. It'll help that. You can add some tomato paste to help that ratio, or you could even cook some sauce down and then add part chopped tomato if you want more of a picante sauce type salsa.
I actually use some clear gel in mine. It just does it a little quicker than cooking it forever. But I use one of those vegetable choppers. It's like a plastic container, has different size blades. I use the little square one for all the different vegetables in my salsa, and I just chop everything, tomatoes, peppers, everything. The thing about peppers in your garden, one jalapeno next to the other one is hot and the other one is not hot at all. So you have to taste your salsa as you're making it, or your spaghetti sauce. If you put a little bit of hot pepper in there, you can't just measure it and put it in, because every pepper has a different ratio of heat, and it doesn't matter if it's one kind or another. It's individual peppers have different levels of heat.
Cherry tomatoes, if you want to, you can. Sometimes we get gobs of cherry tomatoes, and what do you do with them? I've thrown them into the blender and made the sauce like we were talking about, or you can cut them in half and semi-dry them in the oven and then layer them in pint jars with basil and olive oil and then freeze them.
And garlic. You actually don't have to freeze them if you don't put the garlic in. It's just on the edge of safe or not safe, so I freeze mine. And then when I pull out a jar, it is like fresh basil, just so good. And you add it to different things to flavor, or just spread it on your bread. Spread those tomatoes on the bread with the olive oil and the fresh basil smell. Oh, it's so good. Corn, we blanch them and we cut the kernels off and freeze it. This is when we were living in the shed. So when we moved to this new property, there was no house. And so there was a shed that used to be a little storefront for the market garden that was there before us. It was an organic market garden, and it had a field of alfalfa on the side. So at the back, you see the green cooler. In the middle, you see my daughter making bouquets. And inside, we were living, all of us. We had a shower, washer, dryer, one sink, and a stove. And we lived there for a year and a half. Because it was during COVID, and we couldn't get our building permit for months. 8 months we waited for that building permit. So just a lot of things happened. And then you can't get the building supplies. And then just as the way it was. But we were a lot of people. And so it was a real good experience. My daughter lived in a canvas tent until January when she came to Ad Agra. And of course she wasn't monitoring her tent. She was here and the snow collapsed her tent. It ripped a big hole in the top. It was one of those beautiful canvas tents, I was able to fix it and they used it later, but it took us that long to dry it, afterwards. So yeah, she does the same thing I do. I grow a lot of peppers. I slice them up, roast them in the oven. I even peel some of the black parts off, and then I can them, and the recipe is here. You don't want to overcook them, but we use these on pizza and sandwiches, Reuben sandwiches, whatever. It's really good. It's a new recipe for us. We've been doing it for maybe 3 years. We got it from Shantae Fisher. No, that's a different recipe, and I don't think they have this one, so we'll skip that. I wanted to talk about rapini, and I was going to show you a picture, and I forgot to put it in this. Rapini is broccoli rabe. Has anybody had it? Not a single person. Broccoli rabe? It can be. Yeah, it's an Italian delicacy or Portuguese. It grows really well in the spring and kind of well in the fall. And it's one of my favorites. But to deal with the bitterness, you bring a pot of water to boil. You blanch the greens. It's greens and little tiny broccoli heads, like little tiny broccoli heads. And then you take them out and put them in cool water. And then you saute it with garlic and olive oil and you eat it with ciabatta bread or something like that. That's what the Italians would do. But so good. Really good greens. But I found that fresh, before you cook them, they're not as bitter. Or at least when it's still very cool, they're not as bitter. And when I make my green drink for health, I use those greens just as well as kale. Very good for you. So green smoothies. Dr. Emerson is talking about that today, and I think that's where a lot of people are today. The recipe is you take your Vitamix blender and you fill it 3/4 with full of greens, a half a cup of flaxseed, a cup of an apple or a banana, maybe a little pineapple depending on what you like, and a lemon peeled and a little chunk of ginger. Blend that with water, healthy as can be. You can make it taste good according to your taste. Just add more fruit or whatever. My daughter has been doing that for, I don't know, 9 months. She was pregnant and struggling with her digestion, and they were having candida issues and all kinds of things. So she started drinking that, and her health improved drastically. And that baby is healthy as can be. She's still doing it. She drinks a blender full every day. And it's very healthy, and she's nursing the baby just fine. So she does eat other things as well, but that's her main nutrition. And it promotes healing. I did it for 2 months, and I cured a psoriasis spot that I had had for years. I need to do it more. When you're living with so many people in your house, it's hard to do anything special for yourself. So, you know, there's 5 gluten-free people and sugar-free and this and that. And we're trying to, you know, deal with all the health issues that are common in this day and age. So, anyway, I just totally recommend it, but it comes from a lady who had lupus. She had lupus and she was going to die. She'd had it since she was very young. She went to see she met this trainer guy who would help models get fit for whatever they were doing. Models or movie star, I don't know. Anyway, she met him and he wanted to marry her and she said, "Well, I'm not going to live long." And he's like, I'll take however long I can get with you. So she's like, "Well, for the wedding, can you put me on the program you do?" And he said, "Sure." And he put her on cruciferous vegetables, basically, and raw. And basically from there, they developed this green smoothie plan. They have people eating that. That's all they eat. And they're autoimmune diseases are curing. And so it's Brooke Goldner. So if you want to watch YouTubes, it's Brooke Goldner. She cured her lupus. She no longer has lupus. Yes. Cruciferous, meaning kale, broccoli, cabbage. They do use spinach, but anything in the cruciferous line is the best. You can even use cabbage if you can't handle the dark leafy greens, but dark leafy greens have so many nutrients for you. Okay. Yes. Yes, I do use weeds. They grow for free. And I have lots of them. Yeah. So, okay, basil. The only way I know how to keep my basil from turning brown when I'm making pesto is to blanch it real quick. Very, very quick. But it'll stay bright green. And I freeze my pesto. I put it in Ziploc bags and I make them really thin and flat. And I stack them up. And it is so good in the winter to open up a bag. And because it's thin and flat in the bag, you can just kind of crumble it while it's still frozen on your pizza or whatever you're making. So good. Cilantro, you can do the same thing. And I put a recipe in here for cilantro pesto that will help you with detoxing heavy metals. There was a guy my mom knew who had a problem with heavy metals. And he did this every day, and I'm not sure how long it was, but he started to feel better, and he got his health back. So I'm sure that's not the only thing he did, but it is very, very helpful. So parsley, arugula, you can make pesto out of all kinds of things. We always thought it was just basil, but it's not. You can use any of those strong herbs or greens, and it's good. Onions, we talked about storing them already. Garlic also. I have a recipe here for you for leek soup that I made up. You can change it however you want. Corn chowder. Then we talked about the peppers already. Pimentos and peppers. Yes. Yeah, I do. I use baggies. If I'm doing the dried tomatoes with the basil and the olive oil, I use a little jar. Glass. I just don't fill it all the way to the very top. I just leave a little room for expansion. Mm-hmm. But generally, I use the freezer bags. I know we're trying to get away from plastics, but I haven't figured out how to put enough vegetables into my freezer with containers, and containers are tend to be plastic anyway, so it's a conundrum. So we were talking about peppers, the red peppers and the orange and whatever. I slice them up into big chunks, put them in a bag and freeze them, and then when I'm making cashew cheese or pimento cheese or any of those things, I just grab a few out of the bag. They're loose and easy. And we make a lot of cheese at our house.
I also enjoy using them dried, and it's easy because they're in the jar, and you just grab them dried and throw them in, rather than those little pimento jars are kind of spendy. If you're making lots of cheese, peppers, red peppers are great, or you can grow your own pimentos too.
Yeah, so I have a sauerkraut in a jar recipe. Here, I did that class last year, but all the notes are here. I'm not going to go through it all, but making sauerkraut is not so hard, and you can make 2 or 3 jars at a time. You don't have to do tons of cabbage. So if you have 2 cabbages, you can make sauerkraut. And I was very specific on the salt and all the directions. You should be able to do it fairly easily. Then there's a section on the canning and pressure canning. And I think now we're at your recipes.
Okay. Well, I guess I should go back a little bit.
This, by the way, is
her kale chips. Yeah. It's very tasty. When those potatoes come on, you can clean them and steam them. And this is a cucumber tomato salad. I think, I'm not sure if that is in here, but it's very simple. Just cube your cucumbers and tomatoes, add some chopped fresh basil, a sweet onion, cut up, and you can put just a little bit of olive oil or avocado oil in there, and salt to taste, And the tomatoes and the cucumbers create a juice. That's just a really great way to have a good salad for the summer. This was a sweet potato dish. This is a different dish than, it's similar, but the one I put in here is squash, and you can do either sweet potatoes or your winter squash with red onions and rosemary, and that's bake it, and it's very tasty that way. At the end, you can put a little brown sugar if you like or something, and it's a good holiday one, and it just goes over really well. What do I have next? Some corn. Well, I'll talk about this with this picture. Pueblo stew. It's a great summer stew. It's made to be eaten with a tortilla. It's a Southwestern recipe. We should have a Southwestern recipe when we're in Texas, right? So it would be onion, garlics, a little chili powder, cumin, oregano, and then you would use a zucchini or a patty pan or some kind of crookneck squash, and hominy, tomatoes, green beans, pinto beans, some kind of bouillon, vegetable or chicken style bouillon. And you just cook that up into I tend to make it thick because we just put it in tortillas with sour cream or some kind of veggie sour cream, some kind of cheese on top, ranch, and then it's a great summer dish. So the corn in that picture goes for the hominy. And then I talked about salsa already. This is a way to dry your herbs. I don't know, 1 year I planted so much basil, I just didn't realize how much it was. And then I had to dry it. So this is our one row where we had berries that were coming, a new plant. So I just stuck them upside down on the trellis wire and they dried out really nice. I think I have one indoors too. Yeah, or on a drying rack. And then for some of these finer leafed herbs, I found if you could take a trash can or a bin or even a paper bag and beat them inside, and a lot of times the leaves will fall off and then you're not picking every single leaf off. So that can be really helpful. Oh, there's basil. If you are going to dry your basil and it's not on the plant drying like that, you don't want the leaves wet when you dry it, because basil is particularly sensitive to water. And if you want to have fresh basil in from the garden, you want to have it in the house, don't wash it. You can put a rubber band around it, stick it in a jar with some water on the counter, and just use it fresh right there. If you put it in the fridge, it tends to brown, so just leave it like a living plant on the countertop. And then that's another tomato sauce, and I mentioned that. Then I put in there a borscht recipe, the cucumber salad recipe, focaccia bread. One of the girl's friends got her onto making focaccia bread. This is actually a gluten-free recipe. But it's so fun to take those extra tomatoes and onions and basil and just make it an artistic work. If you're doing gluten-free breads, or you're trying to do gluten-free breads, you need to make the dough. It's so different than bread. You know, we always would go for a certain texture and a certain consistency. But gluten-free bread is nice if it has more liquid. And it's somewhere between a thick muffin batter and a pourable cake batter. You want to be able to spread it. But if it's too runny, then it tends to be gummy. And if it's too thick, it tends to be dry. So this just works real good. The other thing I've noticed, if you use oil, a lot of gluten-free recipes, they'll use more oil, but because there's not the gluten to bind, the oil actually, shortens, like shortening is usually a baker's term for, you know, shortening the strands. But in gluten-free, everything's already short. So would use less oil. It's just more for moisture and an addition that way. And this is a picture of a blackberry leaf that was just a unique color. What do I have? Is there anything else left? Oh, it's always fun. This is my husband's dad. who lives about 3/4 of a mile, taking a walk with the girls. And so when the harvest is done, it's time for rest and fellowship. There's one more. And it's just great to be able to have fellowship with others and finish up the harvest.
Do we have any questions?
Yes.
Water bath. Oh, for like pickles? I wouldn't pressure can that. You don't want your pickles mushy. Yeah. So there's different, I mean, I do open kettle for the ketchup, which is something people rarely do anymore, but you boil, you get your ketchup boiling, your jars are hot in the oven, you take them out, you pour in the hot, you don't break your jars, but if you get it just right, and then you just put the lid on, it seals. A lot of people are going to say, oh, but there's enough acid in that ketchup and sugar, yes. Okay, so you take your kettle, you put something at the bottom. Usually a kettle comes, like a hot water bath kettle, comes with a rack at the bottom. But if you don't have one, you can put jar rings underneath. Put your jars in the cool water. Put your jars in there. Make sure the water's cool. Bring your water up to the jar top, neck, top, there's a little bit of disagreement on that between my mother and I. I go to the neck. She's like, it's not covering. Okay. You bring it to a boil, and then you start timing. And so depending on, you know, if you're doing a quart, it's usually 25 minutes or 20 minutes, depending on what it is you're canning. This is when the food's in it. For washing your jars, just wash them really well. If your jars are really dirty, put them through the dishwasher and the heat cycle will clean them really good. Yes. You can use a nice stainless steel pot. Yes, it's just the ones that are meant for a hot water bath hold 7 quarts or 4 2-quart jars, you know, the big ones. And so that's why I would do that. But you can get really nice canners now where that are steam. And you're not lugging boiling water. And yeah, like Vivian's like, you're going to burn yourself someday. Well, you know, and I can outside. I use a propane camping stove, one of those big ones from Costco. I have 2-3 pots going at once. I've got another stove going over here, and I just, because we can a lot. So we have it all set up outside so it's not messing up my house. You water bath. It has the lemon in it, so it's a pickle, basically. It doesn't taste like a sour pickle, but it, yeah, there's enough lemon in it, yes. So she's saying that she had heavy metals. She was tested, and she had heavy metals in her system, and so she started putting a handful of cilantro in her smoothies every morning. And after 1 month, it was down. The levels were back to normal or normal. Very good. Yeah, cilantro is very powerful. Very powerful. Yes. Yes, I want one, but I can't afford it. Freeze dryer. They're awesome. Yeah, yeah.
My father-in-law has one so he can take his freeze dry his food so he can go to Guatemala and work on the wells down there. But it does take a little bit. You have to, there's a little bit of a cycle with the fluids and cleaning it periodically that can take a little time. But otherwise, yeah, very handy.
One of my neighbors has one, and he brings us corn that he's gotten from our field. He's already dried, and so good. And camping food, you know, my kids' backpack and stuff, it's just handy. But at 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, whatever, if you're going to get the big one, I guess. Yeah, it gets complicated, doesn't it? All right, anyone else? Or are we done? Okay, thank you for coming.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.